This is a special KUAR news program. Tonight, Arkansas officials are scheduled to execute death row inmate Jusson Saifu Frankie Parker. He was convicted of the 1984 murder of his former in-laws and the attempted murder of his ex-wife and a Rogers police officer. While living on death row, he discovered Buddhism and has become a mentor of sorts for Buddhists nationwide who have been working to get his sentence commuted to life in prison. Parker admits and regrets his crime, but wants his life spared. Parker's attorney has been using every legal means possible to try and get a stay of execution. But with Tuesday's denial by the U.S. Supreme Court, officials are prepared to carry out Parker's sentence of death. In the next half hour, we'll talk with Parker, and we'll also talk with Governor Mike Huckabee, who has denied Parker clemency out of respect for the victim's family. That's coming up next on KUAR FM 89.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Carl Castle.
I'm Michael Hiplin, and this is a special KUAR news program. Tonight, death row inmate Jusson Saifu Frankie Parker is scheduled to be executed by lethal injection for the murder of his ex-wife's parents. While living on death row for the last 12 years, Parker discovered Buddhism and has become a mentor for Buddhists nationwide who have been fighting his execution. 2 weeks ago, I visited with Parker at Tucker Prison. The now soft-spoken, seemingly gentle man seems an unlikely person to have committed what he admits was a brutal and unjustified act. In 1984, Parker and his wife, Pam Warren Parker, were going through a bitter divorce. Pam's family says that for 7 months in 84, Parker terrorized their family, slashing tires, spray-painting graffiti, and calling their employers in attempts to get them fired. Despite repeated complaints, the Warren family says police never arrested Parker for harassment. The terror culminated on November 5, 1984, when Parker showed up at the Rogers home of his ex-wife's parents. Parker shot James and Sandra Warren, kidnapped his ex-wife Pam, and took her to the Rogers police station, where he shot a police officer and shot his wife before being shot himself in the hand by police. James and Sandra Warren died. Parker, his ex-wife, and the Rogers police officer all have recovered from their wounds. When I spoke with Parker through the grill of Tucker Prison's visitation area, he reflected on that tragic day.
It was wrong, you know. People do stupid stuff when they're going through divorces, especially under drugs and alcohol. And I was just insane. I mean, I was just doing things totally out of character, stuff that I would never thought I was capable of doing. I even had somebody shoot me, you know, by definition, I was showing a danger to myself and others and should have been taken into custody, but they chose not to. And I think if they would, I'm not saying they should have done their job or blaming them for it, but if that would have happened and I could have got put somewhere that they could see my mental state, I doubt if any of this had happened. There is no way to defend that. You get high one day. I was paying people to watch me sleep. I was so paranoid. You know, protect me while I'm asleep because I know they're watching, you know. it was weird.
Were you high when you committed the murders?
Oh, yeah, I've been messed up for about since I got out of the Army. You know. I've been drinking, and I went to work and left and then didn't even go do nothing. Called my secretary, told her I was taking the day off or, you know, and went to lunch with a couple of friends, and we got high and was drinking, and then went to their house and got high some more and freebasing. And then with that little thing throbbing in the back of your mind, and it's just like an automatum, you know, I just was following the thought. Next thing I know, I'm in the hospital. I woke up and I remember the nurse's name was Grace Kelly. And she leaned over me and I could see her name tag and I was like, she's dead. And I said, man, and I was confused, you know. And I was looking around and I was trying to figure out what was wrong. And I looked at my hand, it was hurting and it was all blown up, you know, and tubes in my nose. And I'm trying to just... what's happening? The room's full of cops.
Why?
It was because I'm caught in a Twilight Zone movie and I can't get out. And I'm still there.
So you don't actually remember when you committed the crimes?
Oh, I remember it happening, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not one of those guys that I don't remember it. But I actually do remember it. I just can't remember ever having the Frankie Parker that would do it. You know? Everybody's done something they're sorry for. And, you know, if it's a little thing or a big thing. Parents carry guilt of raising their children, and children carry guilt because their parents raised them wrong. Everybody's done something wrong, and mine is just terribly wrong.
Parker was put on trial twice for the murders. In his first trial, he was convicted of capital murder, but the conviction was thrown out by the Arkansas Supreme Court on a technicality. A second jury again found Parker guilty and sentenced him to death. In his first few years on death row, Parker says he was an angry, uncooperative inmate, but he says his life changed one day while he was in what's known as the hole, which is a form of isolation at Tucker Prison. He says he had requested a Bible, which is the only form of entertainment you're allowed in the hole, and as a joke, a guard threw a book of Buddhist teachings at him. Initially, Parker kicked the book around and became even angrier, but eventually he became bored and began reading the book and says it changed his life.
It was the first verse I read in the book called Dhammapada. And maybe it was the frame of mind or the time of my life where it just made sense, and I read it and I said, you know, well, that's me. You know, talking about me here. And the verse was, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts we make the world. Speak or act with an impure mind, and trouble will follow you as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. And the twin verse to that is, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts we make the world. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness will follow you like your shadow. And the first verse is, yeah, you know, that was me. Polluted, alcohol, drugs. And it led to this. And the real me was controlled by the drugs. And that's why we take drugs, self-medication. And when you become in prison, which is not a drug-free society by any chance, but when I came drug-free, I realized that, hey, you're not that guy. That was wrong. And you had to do the drugs just to be that guy. Humans are notoriously gregarious. We got to be around other people. And so if they're doing drugs, okay, you know, I'm going to do that. Very seldom you see a group of people that drink and do drugs and there's one person there that doesn't. It just doesn't exist. And we do that to fit in.
Yeah.
Misery loves company.
Parker says he began reading more about Buddhism and eventually began practicing it.
I'm pretty rare in the Buddhist community. I mean, here's a death row inmate, a Buddhist. That's kind of like a virgin prostitute. They're very rare. You know? And but it was self-reflection that drove me to that. You know, it's not easy to kill somebody and live with it. And you know, I had to work on that. And then doing that, I discovered that, hey, I was a Buddhist. Just didn't know it yet.
Eventually, Parker wrote to the Little Rock Ecumenical Buddhist Society and told them his story. The group's membership welcomed him as one of their own, and in recent years has been working on his behalf to try and stop his pending execution.
I couldn't have asked for better freedom. See, I thought for years I was like the only Buddhist in the country. I said, well, this is Arkansas. There can't be another Buddhist here. You know, and I'm practicing away, and I'm, you know, and I'm living my life by what I'm studying, you know. And then one day I look in the newspaper and I said, hold it. There's other heathens in this state like myself, like-minded people. And I contacted them, and they've embraced me. And kind of like a family would a stray dog. You take it in, wash it up, love it, take care of it, and that's what they've done to me. And I couldn't... And they've acted as good Buddhists. And I couldn't ask for better friends.
Parker says through Buddhism, he has been able to come to terms with the violent acts he committed. He hasn't necessarily forgiven himself, but is trying to make up for his horrendous crimes by trying to improve other people's lives from within prison. Parker and his attorney have been working the appeals process over the years, objecting to being tried twice on the same charges. The effort succeeded last year when U.S. District Judge Susan Weber Wright threw out his death sentence in favor of life in prison without parole. But a three-judge panel of the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed Judge Wright's decision and reimposed Parker's death sentence. Parker was to die in May of this year, but had his date pushed back while the U.S. Supreme Court was hearing a Georgia case that could have struck down a law limiting death row appeals. The High Court affirmed that law, which meant Parker's execution was back on track. Parker then began appealing to Governor Jim Guy Tucker, who at the time was in the middle of his Whitewater trial. Tucker resigned after his Whitewater conviction.
I thought that I had a chance from Governor Tucker for clemency. But I found myself in a strange situation, seeking clemency from an individual that was seeking clemency, you know, himself. And I figured, well, now here's a guy that can sympathize here, you know, commiserate with me with a little clemency. But I was wrong. I mean, you know, he was obviously delusional. Now I've listened to Mr. Huckabee speak for a couple of years. And there was times that he just sent chills up my spine. And there was times when I said, well, here's a guy that's going to give me a fair shake. That looked at an individual where his life fell out of control, and he fell out of control, did something very bad, and now wants forgiveness and a chance to redeem himself some way. But I was wrong. And, you know, I've heard him, like his speech to Tucker about resigning. And I said, well, okay, he makes sense, you know. But it's obviously, it was just words on his part.
But Governor Mike Huckabee defends his decision not to grant Parker clemency, saying he is allowing the justice system to do its job.
The role of clemency in a governor's administration should be limited to new facts regarding the case itself, evidence that somehow didn't make it through the courts, some new revelation or discovery that has not been properly adjudicated. But it should not be on emotion. It should not be on intimidation or pressure. And frankly, the more of the intimidating kind of things that are going on, the more resolved I think the state has to be in saying that we do not carry out executions on the basis of popular support or popular appeal. We don't take a vote. That vote was made by a jury and affirmed by repeated appellate processes. If ever we allow ourselves to get sort of sucked into that sense of sentimentality rather than justice, we have indeed betrayed the system that our founding fathers very wisely set forth.
Governor Huckabee also says he's determined to carry out Parker's execution out of respect for the victim's family, who are calling for Parker's death. Among them is Parker's ex-wife, Pam Warren Bratcher, who Parker says he hasn't talked with since the incident.
I wouldn't know what to say. What do you tell to somebody that you've killed their parents and shot them? It's kind of like sorry is not enough. It's kind of like if you're deeply in love with a woman and you're trying to tell her that you love her and care for her, but the word love just doesn't explain it enough. But it's the only word we know to express how we feel, but it's not enough. Same with sorry. How do you tell somebody how profoundly sorry you are when sorry is just not enough? Well, you know, I couldn't talk to her. Friend who, of course, I got friends still that know her and talk to her, but she doesn't know they talk to me, I really don't care much about her life. I mean, that's her life. Mm-hmm. How we get ourselves in these messes, you know?
Parker, his supporters, and opponents of the death penalty have all requested meetings with Governor Huckabee, most of which have been denied. Huckabee was upset by what he feels was a publicity stunt when Parker called a Little Rock talk show. Parker's attorney, Jeff Rosenzweig, says Parker told him to thank the talk show host for supporting him, and Rosenzweig offered to use his three-way calling to put Parker through to the talk show, which was a violation of prison policies.
I was originally scheduled to meet, or was willing to meet, with his attorney, but after the stunt was pulled, a very unethical, if not illegal stunt, I realized that they were not so much interested in a serious discussion, but in publicity, and I refused to be a part of a circus of publicity being granted to an individual who has had more than his say in court over 12 years. And after having spoken with the family, and I have talked with them, I just felt that the best thing I can do is be a governor, not a part of a sideshow that his attorney or Mr. Parker would like to somehow create to try to gain attention, not to the crime, but to his circumstances.
Governor Huckabee did grant a last-minute meeting yesterday with a group of Methodist and Catholic ministers who are opposed to the death penalty. But that meeting apparently hasn't changed Huckabee's resolve to carry out Parker's sentence. For the most part, Parker has given up on expecting clemency from Governor Huckabee.
I don't think there's anything I can say to him. I mean, I think I want to live. I made a mistake. If everything what he believes and taught all those years as a preacher is that people have a right to redeem themselves, has a right to seek forgiveness, and has a right to ask a fellow human being for compassion, no matter what wrong you've done. But if he thinks that nobody can ever receive redemption, or he has no compassion, no forgiveness, then I'm wasting my time talking to him. But if everyone that knows me, of course not the one that committed the crime, but everyone that knows me knows that I'm not a bad person. I did a bad thing, and I'm sorry for that. But if he can't see past the crime and give up forgiveness, hate the sin but love the sinner, then I have no chance with that man. And all I'm seeking is what he teaches.
But Governor Huckabee feels Parker and the people who expect him to use his prior occupation as a Baptist minister in his decision on clemency are being hypocritical.
This has sort of brought up an interesting experience for me, in that for almost all of the years I've been involved in politics and public life, people have said, please don't bring your faith into your political practices. And now for the first time, the very people who've told me not to do that now are demanding that I do that. And I'm sitting here figuring out, excuse me, but why, if after 4 years of badgering me not to act on my Christian beliefs but act on the law and the state, are the very people now demanding that I somehow act in the role of a pastor rather than the role of a constitutional officer as governor of the state? So I think my position on this is consistent not only with man's law but with God's law, and I have no conflict about it. This represents the taking of a life, not by Mike Huckabee the individual, nor by a group of citizens, but by all of us collectively, as we have written our laws and they have stood the test of time, and we are simply carrying out that which we resolved as a society to do. And I think that to somehow dismiss the law puts me in the position of singularly rejecting everything that the police, the prosecutor, the jury, the judge, and dozens of appellate processes have brought forth.
One of the strongest criticisms Parker's supporters have of Huckabee is that as his first official act as governor, he moved Parker's execution date from September 17th to today, moving the date up by almost a month and a half. But Huckabee defends that move, saying he had nothing to do with the scheduling of the September date.
Actually, the date was not moved up. The original date was set for May. Then it was moved to June in order to give the courts time to examine everything. They did, and deemed that this execution should be carried out after 12 years. The date was then set July 11th, which was just prior to the Tucker resignation, and he asked that it be pushed further back. So it was pushed by his administration to the second week of July, or the second week actually into my administration. Then it was moved, or actually his office asked us to pick out one of five dates in August, which we did, all agreed upon, made a commitment to the victim's family that that's when it would take place. And shortly thereafter, 2 days following that, we read in the newspaper that Governor Tucker had moved the date to the 17th of September. Well, since that violated the agreement that we felt that we had not only between the former governor and myself, but also the family, I felt compelled to keep the original date because of the promise to the family. And so when I assumed office, I simply kept the date that all of us had agreed on before. So it really was not so much moving it up as it was keeping it where it had been agreed to be. And we feel like that the 12 years of agony and pain and difficulty the family has gone through, the family of the victims, is long enough. And every possible measure of adjudication has been given to Frankie Parker, far more so than were given to the two people who were killed in cold blood, the police officer who was shot at point-blank range, and to the ex-wife, who today bears both the emotional and physical scars of a horrible, horrible circumstance. So this is not a pleasant time. It's not a duty that anyone should enjoy, but it is the responsibility of the state to carry out its laws. And our laws have determined, and the appeal process has affirmed, that Frankie Parker should die on the 8th of August. And that's simply a matter of doing what duty demands one do.
With his execution set to take place tonight, Frankie Parker is now in what's known as a death watch cell or quiet cell, just mere feet from the death chamber at Cummins Prison. In my interview 2 weeks ago, he told me what he's doing to prepare for his own death.
Try to become centered in a spinning world, you know, and I think this phrase is unmoved in a moving world, but it's hard to do, you know. I was there once, I think, and was at peace, and now I'm not as much anxious as I am confused. A good Buddhist practices death, and, you know, when I go to sleep at night, I say, okay, you're closing your eyes, this is what it's like when you die. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Because you actually started dying the day you were born. I mean, the first breath you inhaled, that was life, and when you exhaled that, you started dying. And it's hard to do, you know. It's just there's practices that I practice that you just try to get ready for. Try to be accepting. I mean, it's Yama, the Lord of Death. I mean, he's always right behind you, and sometimes he catches you sooner than he catches somebody else. And I know that it's confusing when they set a date for it and you get focused on that, and then for political reasons they change that date and you start to get focused on that, and they say, well, I won't change that. And then you're getting focused on that, and then they say, well, no, no, and again, and then again, and they say, oh, back over here, and you say, hold it, you know. Yeah. A friend of mine's a lawyer. He said in all his time he's never seen anything like it.
Like Parker, his supporters have conceded that there's very little that can be done to stop tonight's execution. But Parker and his supporters hope that if nothing else, his case will question the death penalty and the validity of allowing someone 12 years to reform themselves in the solitude of prison, only to be put to death anyway. We've tried to present this program giving both sides as equal a say as possible, and we also welcome your comments. Write to KUAR, 2808 South University Avenue, Little Rock, Arkansas, 72204. I'm Michael Hiplin. Thanks for listening.